Now, we have a gentleman who's joining us who was on episode 65 and episode 99. Really looking forward to getting him back on. And when we had a little bit of a hiatus there in the month of September, I was kind of resigned to not being able to do this until spring again, because you start getting into the autumn and the winter, and this guy is busier than busy. He's got a whole lot going on. The highest profile national gig, of course, NFL on Fox Sports, always doing one of the top two games every week here. Also doing Major League Baseball for Fox Sports during the season. Rangers games during the hockey season here, doing some Knicks games from time to time as well. Olympic hockey for the NBC networks, that's not going to be an issue during this season. But college hoops for ESPN Plus. As far as, like we said, heading into break, when you're talking about the higher profile broadcasters out there, I mean, he might be the busiest one and maybe the most versatile schedule of all. I could only be talking about a guest we've really enjoyed having on, and it's going to be great to have him back on. Kenny Albert, welcome back to the FDH Lounge. Kenny, how are you tonight, sir?
I am good.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to have you back on the show. And I'll tell you what, heading into the postseason here with baseball, let me ask you about that. You were covering games all season long here. What did you see during the course of the year? I'm just thinking off the top of my head, you might not have done too many Rangers games just because they weren't considered a higher profile team. Although maybe I'm wrong on that. Maybe you did do some of them. But of the teams that are left, what are your thoughts and your observations heading into the league championship series?
Fox a couple of times, and of the 18 games I worked, it did not include Texas on my schedule, so unfortunately I did not see the Rangers, but obviously they did a great job in winning a series for the first time and advancing to the ALCS, and the acquisition of Cliff Lee, obviously a key to their season, although they had a lot of success before the trade. Living here in the New York area, just outside New York, we see a lot of the Yankees, the Phillies. I was out in San Francisco for one or two Giants games, so had a look at the other three remaining teams more so than Texas. But, just looking at it from afar, because I won't be involved in any of the LCS games, it should be great. I'm actually going to be down in Philadelphia to work the Eagles-Falcons game over the weekend, and games one and two of the NLCS will be in Philadelphia Saturday and Sunday, so there'll certainly be a lot of buzz. And it's similar to last year. I was down in Philly for a football game as well during the playoffs, so... Just looking forward to being in the Philadelphia area. But, I think a lot of people around the country, especially in the East, are looking forward to a potential second straight Yankee-Philly series. But, I don't necessarily think it's a given when you look at, what Texas and San Francisco have been able to do over the last couple of weeks. But it should be fun. It should be a fun 3 weeks or so of the postseason baseball.
It really should. And as an observer of the game, I mean, just thinking back, I mean, can you remember a time going into a National League Championship Series like this? And I understand they may end up going to their fourth starters, both teams. And if that's the case, Bumgarner may end up having a significant advantage over whoever Philly puts out there. But just the 1-2-3, I'm racking my brain trying to think. I mean, obviously everybody's looking at the headliner of Halliday and Lincecum, but even the other two matchups to follow, I can't remember a precedent for this in recent memory.
No, you're right. I mean, when you look at the Phillies with Halliday, of course, and then Oswalt, who obviously came over in the deal from Houston, and then Hamels, who was lights out in the postseason 2 years ago, and then you look at what the Giants are able to throw out there. It should be great. I mean, Lincecum on the big stage. We all know what he's done the last couple of years. One of the great young pitchers in baseball, and Hamels obviously dropped off last year, but is, I don't want to say back to 2008 form, because he's probably not all the way back. It would be hard to get back to what he did in the postseason, but great to see him doing well, especially in the clinching game of the NLDS.
He looks like he's back to being the Cole Hamels that they expected to have, and it's going to be just electric in that city over the weekend when you're there broadcasting for the NFL. Let me start on that note here, and I don't know how closely you keep on top of this or whatever in terms of what your predictions were. But I know the last time we had you on, it was right after the NFL schedule came out. You said it was kind of like Christmas morning for you and some of the guys on the Fox crew here, making predictions and whatnot. I don't know if you have any notes from what your predictions were or memories of that, but have you been pretty close to the mark in terms of where you expected to be the first couple weeks?
Well, I do know this. Right before the NFL season, when somebody asked me about the NFC, the teams I mentioned were Dallas, Minnesota, Green Bay, and New Orleans, and two of them are obviously 1-3 going into their game against one another this weekend. So, and the Saints obviously have not matched what they did over the first 5 weeks last year by any stretch of the imagination. And Green Bay started strong, and now they've had some injury problems crop up as well. So I think, we've seen a lot of surprises over these first 5 weeks. I don't think anybody would have expected Dallas or Minnesota to start the year 1-3. I look at this Atlanta team that I have this week in Philadelphia off to, kind of a quiet 4-1 start. Nobody's really talking about the Falcons. And, the last 2 weeks, the schedule was certainly in their favor. But, they lose a tough game in Pittsburgh week 1 in overtime, and they haven't looked back since. They go down to New Orleans and win in overtime. Of course, the Saints missed a field goal in overtime in that game. But, Atlanta's certainly been a nice story. Chicago over the first 3 weeks until they ran into the Giants defense 2 Sundays ago. You look at what the Giants have been able to do. They've turned things around after struggling against both Tennessee and Chicago. I worked their game in Houston last week, and coming off that 10-sack game against Chicago, they carried over what they did against the Bears on the road in Houston. And right now the Giants and Eagles and Redskins are all tied atop the NFC East. I think Washington is a nice story as well. After starting the year 1-2, winning their last 2 games, and I felt they could be somewhat of a dark horse in the division coming into the season with the additions of McNabb and Shanahan. So and then over in the AFC, Kansas City getting off to the start that they did, starting the year 3-0 before the loss this week, and the Jets bouncing back from the Ravens' loss to win 4 in a row. So a lot of good stories out there, and I think when you head into a season and make those predictions, even after preseason, at least in my case, things get turned upside down pretty quickly.
Yeah, but here's the thing, Kenny. We're going to be doing a segment after we have you on, just looking at football and some of the momentary, what I would call parity in the NFL right now, with a lot of these records that are kind of clumped up and some surprising records. It kind of strikes me because, your initial expectations, I think they still may not be too wide of the mark. It's too early to count out Dallas, Minnesota. Boy, if they get Sidney Rice back and pair him with Randy Moss, I mean, you could still be looking at a situation in the second half where they come on like fire. It almost strikes me that in your position, they got you doing the number 2 games every week as they're ranking them. There may be a situation where you're calling games for teams now that the network perceives as being hot and ascendant and everything like that. Who knows, say, if the Bears or the Redskins or whoever are going to be able to hang on. It may be a weird thing by the time the playoffs come around. You may have called less of those teams' games than you're used to just because of the perceptions that I'm getting skewed during the season.
No, you're absolutely right. And a Dallas or Minnesota could certainly turn things around. Minnesota's got a real tough schedule, but just playing to what you said, the last 2 years, we did Carolina in the playoffs 2 years ago, and I don't think we saw them at all during the regular season, and they wound up winning the NFC South. And last year, the Saints, it's not a big TV market, and they don't get a lot of the bigger percentage games throughout the course of the season. That changed somewhat this year, of course, coming off the Super Bowl. But we didn't see the Saints last year until Week 16, and we wound up doing their game in the playoffs. So, you never know how things might turn out. We had Seattle in the playoffs 3 years ago against Green Bay. Those are the three playoff games that my crew has worked. So, you're right. I mean, there's going to be a team that has only 1 or 2 wins right now that does wind up making the playoffs. We've seen that, over the last couple of years in both conferences. So, they've hit the quarter point. They're actually past the quarter point. They've played 5 games now. But it is still early, I'm sure, in the cases of a couple of the teams that are struggling. But, you get into the bye weeks now, and things will even out somewhat as far as the games played. So we'll see. But looking forward to the Eagles-Falcons game. Michael Vick obviously out with the rib injury last week, and Andy Reid hasn't said anything officially about whether he'll play this week. You know that he wants to, but who knows? The Eagles might wind up going the cautious route over the next 2 weeks because they have a bye week after the Tennessee game next week. So if they can get by without Vic and with Kevin Cobb against Atlanta and Tennessee, you go into the bye, and it would give Vic a full month to heal. So, he's chomping at the bit to get out there, especially against Atlanta. Our crew worked the game last year when the Eagles played in Atlanta, and Vic got into the game at the end. He threw a touchdown pass. He ran for one. So again, no official indication yet from Andy Reid, but, you know, it sounds like all signals are pointing towards Kevin Cobb for this week's game.
Yeah, yeah, that's the best indication out there that everybody seems to think. That makes a lot of sense, you know, for the severity of the injury that Vic had, that he would be out, you know, more than one game. But as far as it goes with this, Kenny, I mean, this is the first time we've had you on during the season and gotten to talk to you like this. Previous times were over the summer and then in the spring. So we're staring down the barrel this week. Falcons, Eagles, you got this coming up. For the sake of all the listeners out there, kind of take us behind the scenes of some of what goes into the preparation for a game. Obviously, you're talking to key coaches and players from both teams, but do you catch a weekend walkthrough with either of the teams? I mean, what are some of the things that go into this behind the scenes as far as how you and your crew get ready for the game?
Well, I'll give you the basic week. We you know, at least from my perspective, I'll start on Monday, whether it's you know, going on the internet, reading everything there is to know about the teams we have on the upcoming Sunday. And I'll use this Sunday's Philly-Atlanta game as an example. You know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, I'm at home, or I could be on the road, obviously, doing hockey or some other event. But Monday through Thursday is the initial preparation, you know, reading articles about last week's game. On Tuesday, we'll get a packet from each team, an email, and then a FedEx packet with all of their updated notes and statistics. You know, we'll pour through the league stats as well. I basically have a pile on my desk, you know, about 4 to 6 inches thick, come Tuesday and Wednesday with all the information that I need to go through. I'll also watch a DVD of each team's previous game. So that's kind of what you do on your own Monday through Thursday. Usually we travel in either Thursday night or Friday, depending, you know, geographically where we're going. And that's myself, Daryl Johnston, Tony Siragusa, producer, director, and a couple of other production guys. And this Friday, we'll go to the Eagles practice at about 11 or 11:30 in the morning at their facility in Philly, right across from Lincoln Financial Field. We'll watch practice. We'll sit down in a conference room when practice is over. Usually talk to three or four players who we request and the head coach, and usually at least one, maybe both coordinators. In the case of the Eagles, you know, Andy Reid has a big say as far as the offense, so usually we'll talk to Andy and then Sean McDermott, the defensive coordinator. If the head coach is more of a defensive-minded guy, then we'll talk to the offensive coordinator. So we'll spend a couple of hours with the Eagles. Friday night we'll have our production dinner where we'll you know, talk about some of the things we learned during the day. And Saturday, when the visiting team gets in, we'll go to their hotel and do the same thing. We'll sit in the conference room and talk to Mike Smith and either one or both coordinators, three or four players, and you know, go through the same drill. Saturday night, we'll have our production meeting where, again, we go over some of the you know, stuff that we learned over the last 36 hours. We'll look at some of the graphics and video elements that were prepared. We'll talk about the opening to the telecast and order some dinner as well. You can never forget about that. So it's really a full week, you know, as far as the preparation, Monday through Thursday on your own, Friday and Saturday with the group. And by Saturday night, you feel like you know everything there is to know about these two teams. You know, we could be doing a game week 12 involving two teams we haven't seen before, but their fans know everything there is to know about their teams. So you really have to play catch-up on the entire season. And, you know, once Sunday comes at 1 o'clock, you have all this information. You probably don't use 10% of it, but, you know, it's all ready just in case, you know, in your mind and in your notes. And, you know, then once the game starts, you really let the game dictate. You don't want to force things in to prove that you did the work and to prove that you studied the teams. And, you know, with us, we have Moose up in the booth and Goose on the field, so it's a bit of a different type crew than most others. Tony's microphone is actually open to him all game. He's not like the typical sideline reporter where we'll throw it down for an injury report. He's a sideline analyst where he'll give his opinions on what's going on in the field. So, you know, Moose and Goose have really developed a great chemistry over the, you know, 6 or 7 or 8 years they've worked together. I've been with them for 4 now and rarely step on each other, rarely talk over each other, and hopefully it's entertaining to the viewers.
Well, I love listening to your crew, and you know, even more so since we've had you on the show and gotten to talk to you. But you know, even before then too, it's pretty cool. While you were giving your answer there about everything that goes into this, I'm very happy to be able to report for me personally. I just pulled up the 506.com. Fortunately, Cleveland is getting this game. So after everything you just told us here, now I get to hear what it sounds like with the examples of this. You know, just a couple days after the fact, it looks like you guys got the Mid-Atlantic. Good part of the South here, all the way out to Cali. So yeah, that's that. But I'm very happy. My market's one of the ones in here. So that because that's amazing on the level of preparation, Kenny. I bet most people have no idea. You know, as you say, starting on Monday and the things that you're doing on your own. You know, most people are just probably have no. I mean, you know, we turn on the broadcasts on Sunday and we hear you and we know that there was something that went into it. Obviously, we know you guys were working on it, but that's a staggering degree of preparation.
No, there is a lot that goes into it, and you know, I always learned that preparation is the key, no matter what sport you're doing, and you know, I just love the preparation aspect, and if I didn't do as much as I do, I would feel like I cheated myself and cheated the viewers. And you know, the 4 to 4.5 months of the football season, I mean, if I'm not sleeping, eating, or doing something with my family, I'm getting ready for, you know, that week's game. And it definitely is a lot of work. And, you know, to me, it's fun work. It's not like I'm, I don't want to make it seem like I'm, you know, trying to be lifted out of a mine like what I've been watching on TV all day today. You know, those guys are heroes. I'm not. But it's fine. It's work. And, you know, try it. Our crew as a whole, we again, like I said, hope to entertain the viewers and hopefully teach them something over the 3 hours on Sunday.
Oh yeah, and that's now I'm guessing from everything that you laid out there that the other things must pick up probably substantially from January on. Like obviously the Rangers are underway right now, but as far as any Knicks fill-ins or anything for college hoops for ESPN Plus. That then must be going much stronger after the NFL's winding down for you, no?
Well, to an extent, I don't do much of the college hoops anymore. Okay. I did that, you know, probably up until about 3 years ago, and then when I picked up the Knicks fill-in for MSG Network, that's really the extent of the basketball that I do. But the hockey I am doing usually Monday through Thursday, and in some cases Friday, depending on the geographics, while football's going on. I flew home from Houston from the Giants-Houston game Sunday night, and the Rangers actually played an afternoon game against the Islanders at the Nassau Coliseum on Long Island on Monday afternoon. So I worked my first Ranger game of the season on Monday. I'll work the home up Friday since we're in Philly. I'll be able to go back and forth from our Eagles production meetings. But hockey, you know, this time of year, like you said, it's during the week. I'll miss the weekend games and you know, do most of the games after the new year. And then as far as the Knicks go, when I fill in for Mike Breen on MSG when he's off on his network assignments, not as many this time of year. There's a couple scattered, and then most of those are after football ends as well.
Okay. As far as it goes with the Rangers, what are some thoughts on the season here? We just talked to Jan Levine from Hockey Buzz in the previous segment, and he was expecting that there might be some tightening on the blue line this year, and you know, some improvements in some areas. Even though there weren't too many big flashy moves that were taking place over the off season here. What are you expecting to see on a game to game basis from the team this year?
Well, you're right. Not a lot of flashy moves. The biggest name they brought in was probably Alex Frolov from the Kings, who's a 3-time 30-goal scorer. As far as toughness, they brought in 6'6" Derek Bougard from the Minnesota Wild. But, you know, the one thing the Rangers have done over the last 4 or 5 years since the lockout, since the salary cap was implemented, they have developed from within. And they have 6 or 7 or 8 good young players on the roster right now who they drafted or signed as free agents as youngsters. You know, something we didn't see from the Rangers prior. You know, they would often sign 3 or 4 big-name free agents during the season. So, you know, I like the direction they've gone with building from within and you know, guys like Brandon Dubinsky and Ryan Callahan and Michael Delzato on defense, Dan Girardi, Mark Stahl, Henrik Lundqvist, of course, their superstar goaltender, was a Ranger draft pick. But I think, you know, much of this season, as was the case last year, really hinges on Lundqvist and Marian Gaborik. Lundqvist played 73 games last year. You know, even he admitted it's probably too much if he wants to be, you know, go deep into the playoffs, and they brought in a good backup in Marty Biron. So, you know, number one, they need Lundqvist to stay healthy. Number two, they need Gaborik to stay healthy. 42 goals last year, played in most of the games. had to miss only a few. But I feel like they do have more depth as far as the scoring goes this year. You know, I think by bringing in Frolov, the continued development of Dubinsky and Callahan, and hopefully some of the other younger players. Artem Anisimov had a good rookie year last year, and he's improved. He's now centering the second line, so they hope for more offensively from him. So, you know, I think it will be a team that scores more this year. They gave up 6 goals the other day against the Islanders, 5 and then 1-2 an empty net. So, you know, I think the young defensemen, as they continue to develop, you know, hopefully they'll cut down on the shots against and the goals against. They had a terrific game against Buffalo on Saturday. Derek Stepan, who I haven't mentioned yet, becoming the 4th player in NHL history to score a hat-trick in his first NHL game. And he didn't put any points on the board on Monday. But, you know, what a debut for Stepan out of the University of Wisconsin. So, again, a lot of good young players. And it's a tough conference with you know, Washington's and Pittsburgh's and Philadelphia, New Jersey. You know, at least on paper, they look to be the top 4 teams heading into the regular season. But should be a fun year. I think the Ranger fans really enjoy watching these young players develop.
Kenny, of the Titans you mentioned in the East there, what they all have in common, obviously Pittsburgh and Washington with their franchise players, and one might also argue when you're looking at, you know, Semin and Malkin and whatever, perhaps even, you know, you know, more than one franchise player there. But we had talked in a previous segment, as I say, with Jan Levine, the name Zach Parise came up, and I mentioned about how he was my choice, unlikely or otherwise, for the Hart Trophy this year. It leads me to the question of when you look at the Rangers and you look at Gaborik, I have the sense, you know, and I've argued with some bitter Ranger fans about this who maybe don't believe it and are suspicious of him with his injuries, that I think he can be that caliber of guy if healthy. Do you think so?
I think he can. I mean, he's probably more one-dimensional than Parise. Mm-hmm. And Parise's had a great career so far in New Jersey. You know, Gaborik, 42 goals last year and a perennial 40-goal scorer when healthy. Probably doesn't play the all-around game that Parise does, but, mm-hmm. You know, as far as the offensive game, he's certainly, I would say, one of the top 5 or 6 pure goal scorers in the league. I mean, you know, just to watch him play on a night-in, night-out basis last year was incredible. Had a terrific first half and then was slowed down a bit following the Olympics when he suffered a couple of injuries. But, you know, just a pure goal scorer. I think he's a guy that could certainly score 50. He has another scorer on his line now in Frolov. You know, the big question is who will wind up centering that line. Erik Christensen had the first shot at it Monday, suffered an injury. We may see Chris Drury there, the captain who's coming back from a broken finger. You know, they really don't have that true number one center. They have some good centers. I mentioned Anisimov, Stepan. He played with those guys in the preseason a little bit, but, you know, obviously when you look at the conference, they don't have a Crosby or an Ovechkin, you know, caliber guy as far as the, you know, all-around superstar forward. But Gaborik's not far behind. I mean, again, when you talk about pure goal scorers, I think he's right there among the top 5 or 6 in the league.
Yeah, just a pure one, no question about it, you know. And you had mentioned about the Olympics, and, of course, as has been the case the last 2 times, can't have you on here and not talk Olympic hockey with you. And looking ahead to Sochi here, I mean, it might be a little bit early to grip about this and about the way things might go, but certainly at the moment it's not looking real promising for the league consenting to put the players in the next time. That's something that I suppose might be collectively bargained. They got to do that CBA in the next year or two. But, you know, as you look at it here, I mean, it probably doesn't affect your status because it's going to be televised one way or another, right? But obviously, you know, you wouldn't have the same degree of enjoyment if they weren't in it. We wouldn't have the same degree of enjoyment watching the broadcast if that weren't the case. So to the extent that it's not too early to think about it, what are your thoughts on that situation and the league maybe being reluctant to send these guys halfway around the world like they did in 06?
Well, aside from the league not having a collective bargaining agreement, the TV rights haven't been decided yet for 2014. That's still up in the air. So I'd love to be involved again. Hopefully it falls into place, but who knows what network those Olympics will wind up on. But as far as the players go, I think absolutely, you know, man to man, they want to be there. The players want to go. They want to represent their country. You know, we've heard some of the comments from guys like Ovechkin who have already threatened to leave his NHL team and play in the Olympics even if the NHL doesn't go. So I find it hard to believe that they won't wind up there. I just think they all want to go. It's a great showcase for hockey, you know, even though it's halfway around the world in Sochi, Russia. And again, I'd be shocked if they took a step backwards. It is something that will have to be worked out in the new collective bargaining agreement. But just my personal opinion is I'd be shocked if the NHL players were not there.
I'm very heartened to hear that analysis. I hope that proves to be the case because it's such an amazing event. You know.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing is, you know, the league, their stance as well. It takes away from 2 weeks of our, you know, prime time. There's no NFL. There's no baseball going on. It's a prime time those 2 weeks. You know, as far as ticket sales and TV, et cetera, for the NHL. But it's not like it's every year. It's once every 4 years. And I think at least, you know, in my opinion, it's got to at least balance out, if not benefit the league, you know, the exposure they get in the Olympics, you know, especially coming off the USA-Canada gold medal game. It's not like they take a 2.5-week break every year. It's once every 4 years. So, you know, I don't know if I could be any stronger on it, but personally, I'd be shocked if they didn't go.
Well, I mean, you're just spot on that, Kenny, because I got to tell you, I mean, I live in a stretch of flyover country here where, you know, there's not, you know, hockey fans populating everywhere like there is where you're at on the East Coast here. And just, you know, anecdotally talking to people and hearing people talking about, oh, Ryan Miller and just everything else like that, it was just great because I, as a hockey guy, love to see other people talking about it. And they were. Everybody was following your broadcast. Everybody was watching what was happening. The league cannot argue with a straight face that they're going to get the same kind of exposure on 2 weeks of February hockey.
No, I wouldn't think so. So I think we agree on that.
Yeah, that's great. Well, here's hoping you're going to be on that again in four years. And, you know, those broadcasts are just so much fun. And I don't know if you'll pull seven games for Slovakia next time. That was a statistical oddity.
that it was fun to watch those guys, and I did work all seven of the games they played.
Yeah, that was amazing. But, Kenny, we always give everybody a chance to plug here at the end here. So, obviously, you got the Fox game going up. I mean, the whole world knows about that and watching you on Fox with the NFL. But the Major League Baseball during the regular season, anything in particular, go ahead, put it out there.
No, I think you pretty much covered it all. Fox football, we have Atlanta and Philly this week, as we've been talking about. Philly at Tennessee next week, so we have the Eagles two straight weeks with Moose and Goose. Fox baseball during the regular season, and then for MSG, Ranger hockey on the radio with Dave Maloney, and then probably about 15 Knicks fill-in games on MSG TV. So I think you pretty much covered it all.
Well, brief follow-up question, Kenny. How far out do you know on the games? Like you're saying 2 weeks in a row with Philly. Do you basically know a week in advance too?
Usually we know about 3 weeks in advance. We haven't found out yet about October 31st. My guess is either Green Bay at the Jets or Minnesota at New England, but we haven't officially been told. But usually we know the next three.
Gotcha. All right, well, love watching you on it. As I say, it's me in particular. I'm looking forward to this week's game and getting to see it after all the information that you've given our listeners here about what goes into one of these broadcasts. It's just going to be a lot of fun to check it out in that way. Kenny, it's always a pleasure. You are one of our favorite guests on the FDH Lounge, sir. We love to have you back on.
Well, I always enjoy it, so anytime. Love to be on again soon.
Thank you so much. Kenny Albert, everybody.